Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Congratulations, Europe. As you've been hearing in the news, folks, much of a continent is the recipient today of the Nobel Peace Prize, awarded to a bond which has linked countries by economic interest as well as in peace for over 60 years. Joining me now to talk about the European Union's Nobel Peace Prize at this time of crisis is David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and contributor to WNYC. He's also the author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Morning, Brian.
And listeners, I want to open up the phones for this. For any European expats or member citizens of European Union countries, anybody listening on the internet over in the EU right now on Friday night, or anybody in the United States listening right now, want to chime in with your reactions to the EU winning the Nobel Peace Prize. This must be emotional in one way or another for many of you who are Europeans. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. This doesn't mean you can all go out and try to claim your percentage of the $1.2 million prize pot. I don't think so. But anyone with member ties to the 27, with ties to the 27 member countries, what are you thinking? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment on our site, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. David, there were murmurs of surprise when the announcement was made. I understand that you were surprised, too.
Oh, yeah, I guess I would say I'm surprised. This is the second time we've seen the prize awarded to an institution in recent times. You may remember that it was given a few years ago to the International Atomic Energy Agency, who at the time was headed by Mohamed El-Baradei, who later became significant in the Egyptian uprisings. But it's always hard to give it to an institution. In this case, they've given it to a big, fractious institution that this year has gone through one of its biggest family feuds. And it was almost like an award for not burning down the house or not throwing out the kids.
So the EU has been on the list of organizations or people considered likely to win for years. And I guess they certainly made a statement with this choice at this time that regardless of the economic fractiousness, here is a continent that since World War II has managed to eschew war after literally centuries of almost continuous war in one part of Europe or another.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you have to remember that there's both a political and an economic union here, and that those two have been at times in significant opposition. Never more so than this past year. And so what they've done is really given an award to maintaining the political objective. And you heard that directly from the head of the Nobel Committee, who, when he was announcing this morning, said there's a great danger. We're already seeing evidence of extremism and nationalistic attitudes. He's talking about in many countries, he said, in the Union. He said there's a real danger that Europe will start disintegrating. So they've almost given this award in anticipation of the Commission and the Union's ability to put down those forces. It's a little reminiscent of when President Obama got the award in 2009 when he was just a few months into office, because the Nobel Committee was sort of awarding him for what he has said and what the objective would be.
That was really anticipatory. This, at least, is acknowledging 67 years of post-World War II peace. And that clip
in which
that
Germany and France have remained friends, and that's not a small accomplishment when you consider what went on in the decades prior.
Absolutely. And here's a little bit of the chairman of the Nobel panel, Thorbjørn Jagland, describing exactly what you just said.
The European Union is currently undergoing grave economic difficulties and considerable social unrest. The Norwegian Nobel Committee wishes to focus on what it sees as the EU's most important result, the successful struggle for peace and reconciliation and for democracy and human rights.
So do you read that in any way as an endorsement of keeping the Eurozone together? And maybe we should make a distinction for listeners who don't follow these jots and tittles, that the Eurozone is not the same thing as the EU.
No, it certainly isn't. The EU is a political organization, and the Eurozone is, of course, an economic one. And this gets at the two competing visions of what Europe should be. The one that just got the award is the vision for being a unifier of a continent that has seen, you know, World War One, World War Two, many conflicts prior to that, and that this unification has avoided not only those wars but really brought the continent together. There's another vision, which is the Eurozone vision, the common currency, and there. It's a different problem because there the central European authorities become this sort of meddlesome overlord that tells Greece or Spain or Italy, you're spending too much, you have to cut your budgets, you have to comply with these regulations. And that's what you are seeing, particularly with the austerity requirements, what you're seeing the riots about in Greece and elsewhere. And so the big question for Europe going forward is, could you begin to see a breakup of the Eurozone without also breaking some of the political union? And I think the committee is concerned if one starts to break, the other one might as well.
By the way, European listeners, where are you? Are you so astonished by the EU winning the Nobel Peace Prize that you can't even go to the phone and call up? We've asked for European listeners before, or expats, or people here visiting, for that matter. And our lines get flooded. We've got almost all our lines free. Are you left speechless by this Nobel Peace?
They're popping champagne corks, Brian.
That's it. Are you just already in a drunken stupor at this hour of the day? So 212-433-WNYC. Come on, those of you who are here from the UK, those of you who are here from France, those of you who came here from Germany and Austria and Sweden, how about your reactions to the Nobel Peace Prize going to the EU itself? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Michael in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hey, thanks. I think I can tell you those European citizens are probably rolling their eyes and lighting another cigarette and laughing.
Maybe. So you're not originally from Europe yourself?
Yeah, no, I'm Italian, but I grew up here for a long time, so I may not have an accent anymore.
Okay, so are you rolling your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of a joke, and I'm, you know, these like sort of new age ideas with the Nobel Peace Prize every year are a little silly. But in terms of European attitudes towards European Union, you know, at least from the perspective I come from, which is Italy, most people are unemployed. They've seen jobs go elsewhere. They've seen manufacturing go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They've seen tensions grow in terms of its relations with Eastern Europe and Turkey and Russia.
How about that basic fact of peace, though, Michael, when much of the rest of the world continues to tear itself apart?
Well, as far as I can tell, it's created more tension, and I'm not sure what war it was avoiding, because I don't think there was much talk of war, but now there seems to be riots in the streets and anger at Germany and all the rest, so I sort of feel like it's done the opposite.
Michael, thank you for your call. Here's another clip of the Nobel chairman, the committee chairman for the Peace Prize, Chairman Jagland, giving a mini history lesson of the formation of the European Union, 21 seconds worth.
Over a 70-year period, Germany and France had fought three wars. Today, war between Germany and France is unthinkable. This shows how, through well-aimed efforts and by building up mutual confidence, historic enemies can become close partners.
Orla in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Orla.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Okay, what do you think? Where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Ireland. And, I think you've probably figured out the answer to why no Europeans were calling in, that people don't really care because Europe seems like such an abstraction. You feel like you're Irish or you're French or Swedish or something. You don't feel, you know, European. And I think the prize also seems kind of ridiculous to give it to the EU, almost to encourage people to think of themselves as European. Hey, you got this collective prize. therefore, you're part of a collective, remember?
Now, Ora, let's stay there for a second, because we're also going to bring in Kathleen from Fort Lee, also from Ireland, right, Kathleen? Kathleen, can we also put line 8 up there right now with Orla? Kathleen, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. You're from Ireland, too?
Yes.
What do you think?
I'm delighted. I'm proud to be a European. In context of what's happening in the rest of the world, I think I'm delighted. The European community has been really helpful for us in Ireland, particularly from people like me from Northern Ireland. The European community, the rights organization, have helped my people, and I'm very proud that they got this.
What do you say to Orla and a couple of callers we've had so far who just shrug and say, well, really, people identify with their countries?
I identify with my country, but my country is, I'm a European. And I say that over and over again, because Europe has helped Ireland, Northern Ireland particularly, coming from the trauma that we've been through and the years of oppression from other states within the European Union, namely the UK.
Orly, you have a little tinge of that too?
Oh, I don't doubt for a minute that Ireland benefited hugely from European aid. And certainly was a huge part of the Celtic Tiger story. But it still feels like Europe. I also feel European, but it's very secondary. It still feels like an abstraction. I don't feel the way Americans, and by that I mean people from the States, feel American, despite them coming from individual states, for example, is very different in my mind to how Europeans feel European, despite coming from different countries.
Orla, thank you so much. Let's go to Catherine in Warwick. You're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I have been listening to the media this morning, all type of media, TV, radio, and I have not heard one piece of information that is very interesting, considering that a Peace Nobel Prize is given by Norway. Is that Norway, if the European Union is so wonderful, how come Norway is not a member of the European Union?
David Sanger, is that true?
Norway isn't. You know, they could sign up, I guess, but...
No, they have never, and they have no intention of becoming. I have worked in the international area,
right.
And I can tell you.
Catherine, thank you very much. Catherine from France, by the way, if you couldn't tell.
That's right. They have not, and they've chosen not to. But, you know, Orla's comment, you know, reminds me of that great Kissinger line, the Henry Kissinger line, when he said at one point, reportedly when he was secretary, like all Henry Kissinger lines, this one may be too good to be true, but I think this one is true, who do I call when I want to call Europe? And you know, his point was that we still live in a world in which we call on individual states, by and large, to get something done on the theory that they can intervene in an economic or military or diplomatic crisis more quickly. And, of course, the difficulty with a group as diverse as the European Union is that getting them to come to a common agreement is difficult. And you've seen that time and time again, and you've seen it some in the Arab Spring. You saw it in the conflict in the Balkans years ago. So, again, what the committee has done here is try to encourage, embrace, and renew a concept. But it's a concept that has worked out only sort of sporadically as a political entity.
Maybe Henry Kissinger, with all the quotes, kind of like Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra once said, I didn't say half the things I said.
That's right. That's right. Although this one, I think Kissinger has owned up to.
Susanna in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Susanna.
You shame me into calling, so perhaps you have a few other people on the line too now.
Yeah, whatever works.
Good.
If it takes shame, then, you know, I'm not above it.
I'm from Britain, and my husband is from Bulgaria.
So what did you think when you heard that the EU won the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yes. I'm very enthusiastic about that. I think it's a great idea.
Because?
Because I think this is very inspiring, and what David Sanger was saying, you know, that to help Europeans through this sort of very difficult time to regard what they've done in the past positively, and, you know, we can carry on doing things and gaining ground, hopefully.
Susanna, thank you very much. David Sanger, somehow the United States came up at this Nobel Prize conference. Chairman Yaglund said, quote, "There are many things to say about the economic crisis, where it originated, for instance. It started in the United States, and we had to deal with it. It started with Lehman Brothers." Did he have to take that shot?
Well, why shouldn't he? Everybody else has. It's a point the Chinese make all the time, that the economic crisis began in the U.S. But the interesting question is, given the looming problems that, say, Greece or Spain had, which were not of American origin, basically they were of the origin of trying to manipulate the numbers for some time to maintain that they were staying within the deficit requirements and other requirements of the Eurozone.
Right, and we spend so much time in the U.S. now thinking about how the Eurozone crisis will spill back
to
our shores.
Back to us. But the fact of the matter is that what happened to Greece and to Spain, it was going to happen sooner or later, and I think the U.S. probably created a spark that enabled it to happen sooner, but I think it would be a little bit of a fantasy to think that that issue was not going to come home to roost sooner or later.
Oh, so here's John in Newton from a mixed family, let's say. You're from an intermarriage, John?
Yes, I'm an Irish national. I was born in Ireland, immigrated, and I married a Finnish national. So we have a Finnish side of the family and an Irish side.
So how's this going down today?
I was telling your screener, it's like World War II in our house some nights, because the Finnish side is very pragmatic, very austere, and they see the Irish side and the economy in Ireland is dragging down the entire European Union. And they're quite angry. I think the Finnish prime minister has said as much when he's interviewed about Greece and Italy. He'd be quite happy to cut them loose. And for my little microcosm, our house is getting the same feedback. We defend Ireland on my side as, you know, an up-and-coming country, but the Finnish people are fed up with the European, you know, spending habits and social programs and what have you.
As long as you don't do it with missiles, then maybe you can keep the Nobel Peace Prize. John, thank you very much. You know, David Sanger, this reminded us of some news about economic efforts to further peace in a very different part of the world. Yesterday, several countries pledged $165 million to a World Bank fund to help economic transitions in nations swept up in the Arab Spring. Saudi Arabia and the UK gave $25 million each. The US gave $50 million. Is there a lesson here about war that we can ensure peace or help to with wealth?
Not always, no. You know, in fact, when you think about the amounts that were pledged there, and you think about the enormity of the economic need in the non-oil Arab states caught up in the Arab Spring, you realize that these commitments were symbolically very nice, but they're basically rounding errors. When I was in Egypt in January, the U.S. was coming along, and there were officials there the same week I was there saying, you know, we might be able to increase your aid by $500 million a year or something like that. This was for the non-military aid. And the Egyptians were pointing out that they were spending at that time, fortunately they don't have to anymore, $2 billion a month just supporting their currency. So just keeping the currency from tanking against mm-hmm. the dollar. I wanted to go back to the point that your half-Irish, half-Finnish family was making.
Yeah.
You know, the big split in Europe these days is between the North and the South. It's between, you know, the Germanys and, to some degree, France and other, you know, successful large economies that have, by and large, managed their finances not perfectly but not too terribly badly, and a very different tradition in the South of Europe. And that's what's leading to the resentments. And many in Germany share that view that, you know, if Greece wanted to leave the Eurozone, you know, they'd throw them the bon voyage party, that they view it as a drag. And they ask the question, why should German taxpayers be paying to support bad decisions made in Greece or Italy or Spain and so forth? And that really is the big issue that's got to get worked out within the Eurozone.
Here is Narunas in Brooklyn, originally from Lithuania. Hi, Narunas.
Hi, hello, Brian. I'm just calling in with a very positive response to the to the EU being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, my main comment would be that I think the Baltic states have benefited enormously from joining the EU, security-wise and economy-wise.
Thank you very much. And I think that's an aspect that we haven't touched on yet, David, which is that the EU is still expanding, that countries like the Baltic states wanted in when they got liberated after the end of the Cold War, that Turkey wants in today, and that's a matter of discussion, right?
That's right. And, you know, you have countries that are in some of these arrangements but not in others. For example, Turkey is in NATO. It's a NATO member, and that may become a critical issue as the Syrian war heats up and the Turks are beginning to look around for aid if they get further into this military aid. On the other hand, they're not members of the European Union, and there has been an increasing tension on the question of whether or not Europe expanded too quickly and brought in countries that weren't really ready to sign up to at least the economic side of the bargain, which is the hard part of the bargain. So, you know, this is the, you know, baseball expansion team problem, which is you want to make it as inclusive as you can, but you don't want to manage along the way to dilute the requirements.
Well, we did get a lot of interesting European callers on the line eventually. Maybe this is the kind of thing they say at the State Department. The Europeans show up. You just have to prod them a little bit.
Yeah, they say that and some other things.
And we thank David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times, WNYC contributor and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, for talking with us about the EU winning the Nobel Peace Prize today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, back to the debate. We'll talk about the optics, the nonverbal body language. Stay with us. We'll be right back.